Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I've got a pretty weird cold going on, so I probably sound like a frog. So apologies in advance, but the advice is still good. So today we're going to be talking about what I think is a pretty fun example of some big mistakes that I've seen people make that I think will be really useful in just applying it to your own life. We're going to talk about the sirens today, the siren song mistakes of student loans. This is basically entitled Avoid the Sirens of Student Loan World. What do I mean by that? So I don't know, it's probably been a while since you've taken Greek mythology, right? So if you think about the sirens, I'm not going to look this up to make sure that it's totally accurate, but basically the sirens were these mythological creatures that tried to tempt these Greek sailors to their death. So the idea is their song was so beautiful that it would make people go crazy and they would be drawn to it and to the point of dying and drowning, right? I think this might have been Odysseus. Like if you think about like the Odyssey in high school, you maybe read that at one point. So when people talk about siren song, that's the idea, is something that's so tempting, it lures you to your doom. Luckily, that's not the case in personal finance. Like there's very few things that lure you to mortal peril. But I do want to talk about this idea of the siren songs of student loans. So I'm going to give you basically seven examples of really key mistakes that I've seen people be lured into and make huge mistakes in their own personal lives. And it's stuff that is so common that if you avoid any of these common mistakes, it's going to make a big difference in your future wealth growth. So the first of the seven examples of siren songs to avoid in student loan land is fixation on the interest rate. I think that it makes a lot of sense for you to look at your different interest rates. You might have had 20 different loans. And what do you see on each of them? You see your, 3.4 subsidized rate. You see your 5-6% Stafford loan rates, and then you see your plus loans. And your plus loans, maybe they have a rate that's 7.6. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people say, well, shouldn't I try to pay down my 7.6% loan first so that it's, even though if I'm going for forgiveness, I've got a little bit less of a daunting task ahead of me. And this is a perfect example of what I mean when I say avoid the siren songs. What's happening is remember that if you're going for student loan forgiveness, your debt is either a tax or it's a monthly payment. Right? IDR, income-driven repayment, is either a percent of your income that you're losing every month, and you're trying to lose as little as possible from smart planning, which is, a lot of why people hire us for help, or you're trying to pay a fixed monthly amount because you're trying to get rid of the loans, hopefully as fast as possible. And whether or not you should do either of those paths, it depends on a lot of different things, right? So if you need to go for forgiveness, paying anything extra beyond the minimum is a huge mistake. And so this is what people do so often, is they see that 7% loan and they think, well, I got to get rid of that. That's a 7% loan. But in reality, it doesn't matter that it's 7% because it could be 700% and it's still irrelevant, right? Because your goal is to pay as little as possible because you're trying to go for forgiveness. So this is a really dangerous trap. Fixation on the interest rate. Don't fall for it. It's a siren song. It's something that's trying to lure you away from good financial decisions into bad financial decisions. Remember that what is the cost of paying down a loan that could have been forgiven? Well, so say you've got a $10,000 loan at 7% and $300,000 of loans that are going to go for forgiveness no matter what. So if you pay $10,000 towards paying off that 7% loan, what are you losing? That $10,000 loan would be forgiven along with your $300,000 in 20 years with something like pay as you earn, right? So say that $10,000 loan, especially with this new repay interest subsidy that might be coming out, let's just say that in, 20 years, it's also $10,000, right? So that $10,000 is forgiven. Worst case scenario, you have to pay income taxes on that. So let's say you pay 40% income taxes on your $10,000 loan that would have been forgiven. So effectively what that means is in 20 years, you would pay 40% of $10,000, so $4,000. And that $4,000 is coming in 20 years from now instead of today. So if you adjust for inflation, that $4,000 in 20 years maybe is worth $1,500 or $2,000 today. So effectively, when you fall for this interest rate fixation, what you're doing is you're trading $10,000 now for $1,500 to $2,000 in 20 years. So you're kind of lighting 80 to 90% of your money on fire. That's a really big amount of money to just kind of blow up. And so this is why it's so dangerous to fall for the trick of focusing on your interest rate. Number two of seven of the siren songs of student loans to avoid is seeking a PSLF eligible job at all costs. So even if you have $400,000 or $500,000 of loans, the reality is you're paying a percent of your income. Worst case scenario, that's what you're stuck with. And so once you deal with taking into account the deductions that you get, you're probably paying not 10% of your income, but you're probably paying, you know, 8 or 9% of your income. And you're paying that for either 10 years PSLF or 20 or 25 years outside of PSLF. And so if you really think about that, that's a income tax. Basically, what you're committing to is paying an income tax for 10 years or 20 or 25 years. And what I've seen in almost every case, not all, but almost every case, is when you trade limiting yourself to the world of PSLF eligible jobs, you are becoming fixated on that PSLF eligible employment and qualifying for PSLF instead of having the right quality of life and high enough income that you could have. So what's an example of this? Say you've got somebody who's a urologist and they do a five-year residency and they've got five additional years to go to get PSLF. In most every case, that person would make more money, even with a ton of loans, basically going to the private sector. Even if they had to pay the loans back, even if they have $400,000, that person's probably going to make at least enough to go to the private sector and make that additional salary that they would make in the private sector and give up PSLF. In the case of somebody that's more of like a primary care doctor, where you know you're doing maybe 3-year residency and you've got 7 years as an attending somewhere until you get PSLF, your choice again is 8 or 9% of your income for 10 years or for 20 years total. And so if you think about what is the value of that in a per dollar salary value perspective, you know, usually you find that it's worth $20,000 or $30,000 in salary value per year. And if you have a very long training period where you're only talking about being an attending somewhere for a short window of time, yes, it can make sense to take the PSLF eligible job. But the point is we've done 11,000 student loan consults, even more if you count follow-up consults. So the point is, I almost never see somebody that the PSLF setup is so good that to abandon it would be disastrous. I would say 95% of the time, you know, whether or not you take a PSLF eligible job or not is not a life-changing financial decision because of the ability to have the backup of paying a percent of your income in the private sector with IDR plans. So that would be the suggestion, is do not fall for PSLF fixation and basically being lured into an unhappy arrangement because of this idea that you have to get PSLF no matter what. It's one of the top kind of results from a consult that surprises people. Is, oh, I thought I had to do PSLF, but apparently I don't. I have options. Number three siren song is student loan repayment assistance fixation. So I will give an example in the context of a NHSC repayment benefit, so National Health Service Corps. This is a deal where, you know, you work in a certain kind of clinic for a certain number of years and you get some sort of five-figure amount of money towards your student loans every year. I've seen people, and I'll give you one example from a client consult I had years ago, where this person had $400,000 of loans, was making, you know, $130,000 a year, and he was going to go for forgiveness no matter what, even if he went and started his own private practice, just because of the lifestyle that he wanted to have. He wanted to work in a certain moderately populated area, right? So you're limiting upside in terms of how much competition you'll face. And also he wanted to work a certain number of days a week. So that means he's not going to have more than a certain amount of income because he also didn't want to have a bunch of partner employees and have to deal with all that. In other words, he was looking for, you know, a lifestyle business, but he thought that his $400,000 in student loans had to get paid down at all costs. He felt like he needed a student loan repayment assistance benefit to do that because all of the other, you know, associate jobs in his area paid about the same amount that he would work and get at the nonprofit clinic. And so that's why he felt like he needed to take that nonprofit clinic job and get that repayment assistance benefit of five figures towards his student loans every year. So he was driving 2 hours one way, almost 2 hours, maybe like an hour, 50 minutes or something to work every day because his fiance was driving the opposite direction for a job on the north side of the big major city they were close to. So, I mean, if you think about it, how crazy. So every day they would go in the opposite direction and come back home. And sometimes they would be stuck in traffic for 2.5 hours each way. So you're talking about, you know, a total commute of, 4 hours a day on typical traffic days. How brutal. I mean, oh my gosh, you know, you want to talk about something intense. I mean, that's really intense. And he was so exhausted, so tired. And he's like, I know this is not forever. This is just, you know, for 3 years while we get some money to pay on our loans, get a head start, you know, establish ourselves. And then I told him during the consult, I said, did you know that this extra money you're getting towards your student loans, you're going to pay down about $100,000 of it and still have $300,000 left to go. And when you're done with this period of time where you guys can move, you're still going to go for forgiveness. So in other words, this money that he was paying towards his loans, it was mainly just paying down the forgiven balance that he would get one day. And so he was pretty much wasting all that benefit. His mind was blown. He was really upset, not necessarily at me, but just at the idea that he had been driving many hours out of his way to get this job and taking on all this stress and dealing with a lower quality of life, all because he thought that he had to get student loan repayment assistance benefits, and he didn't. And it was life-changing for him because he realized, oh my gosh, I can literally quit my job like once I've fulfilled the required, you know, service term that I have to sign on or else I have to pay them back. And then when he hit that, he was like, I'm out of here. I can finally have a better lifestyle. So that's a really crazy thing, right? What happened to him? He got lured by the idea of getting student loan repayment money. That was his thing that he was basically getting. Number four on my list is, I would say, the lure of not taking on additional debt for school. So what we often see is, like, sometimes people will have $200,000-$300,000 of loans and they will realize, oh my gosh, I chose the wrong career. There's guilt, there's shame, there's fear, there's anxiety. And you feel like, well, I already took all this debt on and there's no way I can go back to school and take on more debt to change my career because that's just impossible, because taking on additional debt is unthinkable. So I'm just going to be a nurse, a chiropractor, a lawyer, you know, the rest of my career. And that's, you know, or I'm just going to drop out of the labor force because I can pay on income driven repayment and it is what it is. Or I'm going to try to do something different, but I can't take on any additional debt for it. So that's actually not true. In reality, because of PLUS loans, you can take out as much loans as you want for as many different degrees as you want. And that is okay to do that. And so some of the biggest success stories that we see for clients in terms of just going from not a great place to a great place is people who, you know, thought they were screwed, thought that they had no chance to have a better career. And, you know, like people that learned about being a physician assistant or learned about being a nurse practitioner or learned about going back for a different type of medical career, you know, and then maybe like some lawyers that realized they wanted to do medicine and they quit and they went to dental school. And they did that and they took out loans and they had $600,000 of student loans. But in reality, it wasn't that different from $200,000 of student loans and they were in a career that they enjoyed more. So I would just encourage you to not view taking out additional student debt. If you already have it, you already have it. You're already paying back on an income-driven repayment, right? If you aren't happy with what you're doing, you might as well take on additional federal, not private, federal student loans to get the career that you want to have. Number five of the siren songs to avoid is paying for school with cash versus loans. So an example of this is I kind of had a pro bono conversation with someone who had lost their spouse, who had three kids, and they had a modest life insurance settlement. That's all they had. This is a case of, you know, a very high income earner spouse dying and having a spouse with three kids without a big income source left behind. And the life insurance wasn't necessarily that adequate to continue with the lifestyle that they had. And so what do you do in that case? You've got three kids that have to go to college, somebody that doesn't necessarily feel the need to work really hard for high income because, you know, that's just not what she wanted to do with her life. What she was being told by everybody is, you know, hey, you got to pay for your kids' school, right? You watch all these movies. What do they tell you to do? Oh, you know, I took out a home equity loan to pay for my kids' college, you know, or I have to be working until I'm 75 because I got three kids to put through college, right? There's all this culture of reasons that we tell ourselves when we do something. And in this particular case, you know, this individual, like, the smart thing for her to do is actually to take out max Parent PLUS loans, because she'd have to cash out half of her life insurance money for the rest of her life to pay for her three kids to go to college. And she's going to be a very moderate income earner no matter what. So the thing is like, because of this stigma of taking out loans to pay for college, she's being pushed mentally into this idea of, oh, I have to pay for all of my kids' school with the cash savings that we have that, you know, my spouse left behind with the life insurance settlement money. And it's kind of a huge mental hill to overcome. But literally, you know, the smart move for her is to take out $400,000 or $500,000 in Parent PLUS loans to send her three kids to the schools that they wanted to go to that she could afford to pay cash for, so that she can hold back that income so that she can have money to live on the rest of her life, instead of wasted on the kids' school. Now, you might say, well, that's irresponsible, that's immoral, blah, 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 blah. Well, did you know that the vast majority of the middle class pays for nursing home expenses through the Medicaid program? The vast majority of people. Makes a lot of sense if you think about it. How many people have a long-term care policy? Not that many. How many people make it to 95? More than you would think. And then how many people have enough money to spend $120,000 a year on elder care expenses? Not very many, right? So there's really kind of this giant chasm of people that have, there's people that have the long-term care insurance policies. There's people that are rich enough that they have multiple millions to self-insure their risk of long-term care. And then there's your typical person with a pension or some Social Security with a paid-off house and a couple hundred thousand dollars to their name that basically can't afford to go pay for their nursing home expenses. And so what you'll see with estate planners, with a whole bunch, there's a huge trust and estate lawyer kind of industry targeted at the middle class. And the whole plan is to get 85-year-old mom's assets into a trust so you can hold on to it for 5 years. And then once the trust owns it, it's not owned in your name. And so that money can now go to your heirs and it's not counted against you in terms of Medicaid calculations for your nursing home benefit. So nursing home gets picked up completely by Medicaid, and then, you know, you don't have to worry about it. So this is an example of a hack that smart planning individuals use for middle-class nursing home expenses. But for some reason, we don't use that same hack for paying for college through the Parent Plus backdoor to income-driven repayment. Why do we not do that? It's because of culture. I think if, again, it's because of this idea that there is a moral imperative for parents that can afford to pay for their kids' school by writing checks when they don't have to. Again, this is a allure, right? This is the lure of doing the right thing, being honorable, being responsible. But if you think about it, questions of honor often get people, in history at least, killed, right? Like, what do you learn from watching the Alexander Hamilton musical? He probably shouldn't have been so pigheaded and challenged Aaron Burr to a duel, or fought a duel to Aaron Burr over something that probably didn't matter that much. But he did, and he ended up dead for it, right? I'm not saying that's the same thing here, but you get the idea. Is there's these, you know, questions of honor, like, you know, paying, I can afford to pay for my kid's school cash. Well, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe that's a bad idea. And maybe the consequence of doing that is you're not going to have as much financial security and you're going to have to work for several more years. That's the siren song to avoid, number five. Now, number six siren song to avoid of student loans is buying into debt-free hustle culture. If you think about your 20s and your 30s, they are extremely valuable years in your life. Most people, knock on wood, don't have a ton of health problems yet. You've got a lot of more energy than when you're older. You've got more ability to take risks. You've got more just ability to enjoy things. I mean, frankly, just because you've got more of your health given to you. And so it's true that sacrificing and saving a lot of money and putting a lot of money away for your future by either putting it into assets or into debt does have exponential effects when you do it at a young age. That's definitely true. But the problem is there's sort of a false idol or a worship at the altar that takes place of being debt-free. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not the thing you want to focus on at the exclusion of everything else. Things like having balance in your life, things like having a good job that you enjoy, making progress towards your financial goals, making yourself feel like you're not putting off major milestones like having a family, having kids, getting married, buying a house. You know, those things are important too. Unfortunately, I think that there are businesses out there that their entire brand is you must be debt free or you're a failure, right? You must be debt free by this point in your life, or, you know, you failed. The reason why this debt free hustle culture works well is because of the trick it plays on you psychologically. So I want you to think about something, for example, okay? If I have a student loan I've got to pay off and I've bought into debt free hustle culture and my kids want to go to Disney World, I can tell my sad kids, sorry, we're not going to Disney World this year. Mommy's got to pay off we've got to pay that $2,000 a month student loan to get rid of our debt, because that's what we're prioritizing right now. That's reasonable. Now, the problem is like, it's pretty hard to say, hey, sorry, kids, you know, mommy or daddy's got to pay $2,000 a month into our index mutual funds this year, so we're not going to go to Disney World because I've got to hit my asset savings target. So the reason why debt-free hustle culture works is not because it's the right decision, but it's because it psychologically tricks you into a high savings rate. It makes you feel like you're incapable of eating anything other than beans and rice and living in a cardboard box. and everything you've got to do goes into paying down your debt. Now, my experience is when you make an idol of something like debt freedom, it's going to disappoint you. So the goal is not to not make adult smart trade-off decisions and maybe deciding to not go on expensive vacations some years because you need to accomplish other financial goals. That's not my point. My point is don't buy into there only being one way of doing things. Yes, you can be debt-free. It's good. I will tell you that we've been debt-free for several years since we paid off my wife's six figures of student loans. It ended up not really having that big of an impact on our happiness level. Why? Like, you know, other things like our son's medical problems and just the ups and downs of marriage, business, COVID, all those things had a much bigger impact on us versus being debt-free. And then, you know, other problems pop up, problems like not being able to fix up your broken down house because there's pandemic related supply chain disruptions, right? Not knowing what kind of business structure to do because of just various business challenges that pop up. I mean, the stress of trying to just have your son live versus not live with all the medical issues that he's been through the past year. So what I'm saying is debt freedom, if it's a focus of yours, it's okay, but it's something that you want to be real cautious about because your happiness is just not at all going to depend on whether or not you have zero debt to your name. And so since that's the case, what you really want to be thinking about is, you know, how I want to spend my time. What do I want to be experiencing? What kind of role do I want to be in? What kind of hours do I want to be working? What kind of children do I want to have versus not have? What kind of relationship do I want to have versus not have? What kind of house do I feel like I need to feel comfortable? What kind of vacations do I want to take to feel like I'm enjoying my time on this earth? So those kind of things, I think, and just seeking balance is just far more important than idolizing debt-free hustle culture. So that's Siren Song number six. Siren Song number seven is the lure of sticking around for a high salary job because you feel like you need to pay your loans. I cannot tell you how many people have stayed in bad jobs or bad jobs for them is what I should say, just to pay down their student loans. Was an example of this? Well, you know, staying in, for example, like a big law job where you're working 90 hours a week because you feel like you've got $300,000 of law school loans you got to pay down. That's a mistake. That's not going to make you happy. That's not something that you should do. Now, if you've already done it and it's over with and you made that decision, okay, sure, you know, you make your decisions and you move on, right? But the point is that person instead, if they were miserable, then what they could do is quit their big law job, get on an income-driven repayment plan, and then go pursue their dreams of doing that public sector job or doing the startup or, you know, doing something else as long as they have planned by setting aside enough money to cover your worst case expenses, right? Making sure that you're not going to be cash poor going into credit card debt while pursuing your dream. Making sure you've got a backup plan where you can pivot from that startup job that may or may not work out to an in-house counsel somewhere if things don't work out like you thought they were going to work out. I do think that it's okay to stay in that high salary job. Like certainly to, if you're right out of school, you need to build up some cash savings. You need to build out a little bit of a cushion to be able to take risks in your life. So, you know, that can be a valid reason to get the high salary job and keep the high salary job for a little bit, but you shouldn't stay in that job just to pay your student loans. And what happens a lot, you know, in the dental space as an example, is somebody will take that associate job and they will stay in their associate job for years because they feel like it's too risky for them to strike off on their own, having their own practice or buying into a practice when they've got $400,000 of student loans that they feel like they have to have a high income to be able to pay back first. So that's a big mistake because you're ultimately not putting your goals and your long-term financial health first. You're focusing and having fixation problems on the student loans. So just to recap these seven different reasons of siren songs that people fall for with their student loans, people get fixated on things like their interest rate, having PSLF eligibility, student loan repayment assistance benefits, not taking on additional debt for more degrees they want to do, feeling like they have to pay for school with cash, versus taking out loans, buying into debt-free hustle culture, and then sticking around for high salary jobs you're not passionate about. So all of these different paths are just mistakes that don't need to get made. And it's something that you don't have to do because you have choices in your life. And that's really why we exist. Student Loan Planner helps folks figure out what is the way that you can live your best life, regardless of your student loan debt. So, you know, we obviously love to help you out if you need help with that. StudentLoanPlanner.com/book. I also want to say thank you to everybody who took the survey that we did a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to go into any detail about it because I can't for regulatory reasons, but just basically plan on Student Loan Planner launching something very big. And what we hope will be the month of May after the IDR waiver consolidation deadline is over. So that's what I can say about that right now. I'll say too, with the Supreme Court case that happened, we will try to give you as much breaking news coverage as that as possible. We might do various extra shows of the podcast just to cover anything that we feel like we might need to cover. I would also say, you know, expect chaos because of all the things going on. We talk about this in the podcast, but the Department of Education is being kind of caught in budget battles right now because, you know, Republicans do have control over power of the purse because they have the House of Representatives where appropriation bills, I believe, originate. And so, you know, one of the weapons that they are looking at is saying, well, we can defund the student loan division of the Department of Education so that it doesn't have any money to do the relief that the Biden administration is trying to do. And so that's creating all kinds of problems for implementation of the new IDR waiver, problems with implementing the rest of the PSLF waiver, problems with implementing cancellation, and then also just this new IDR plan they're trying to come out with. So, you know, expect issues with that. We will cover this as in-depth as we possibly can. Unfortunately, it's just a hazard of the job right now of all these legal minefields that are occurring, right? Because Congress can't agree on anything. So the executive branch tries to take matters into its own hands. But then when the executive takes a bunch of power, the legislative branch receives these challenges that they decide to insert themselves into to try to rein in the executive branch. It's very dysfunctional. It's very confusing. I fully understand why people would be frustrated, but just know that we'll explain what's at risk, what's not at risk. And generally speaking, none of our people really had that much to worry about. You know, there are very much rules that we, you know, give advice on that people fall into these buckets of things that they can take action on and save. So I wouldn't worry about it. We'll certainly cover anything that needs to come up. So avoid, you know, falling for these student debt traps. If you hear these siren songs, if you buy into the conventional wisdom around student loans, it will lure you away from your financial goals. Just like Odysseus was tied down to the mast of his ship and to avoid the sirens, and they put stuff in his ears so he wouldn't hear the song. Maybe sometimes you need to hear some of that for yourself, you know, and avoid the fixation on these student loan mistakes. So my goal again is that you live your best life and not feel like the loans need to hold you back. So thank you everybody for listening to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. Any comments or questions on the show, feel free to leave us a voicemail, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. And until next time, I'm Travis of Student Loan Planner. Thank you for listening.